Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Cazora, always Lynn, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 13, Episode 136. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Cazora, SteelersDepot.com. Thanks for being back with us here this Monday, Steelers Nation. A happy Memorial Day to everybody celebrating out there. A lot of people off work with their cookouts and hopefully listening to a little bit of Pittsburgh Steelers talk along the way. Dave, how you doing?
Doing good on this Memorial Day Monday. What do you got? You got anything special planned food-wise today, or just same old, same old?
Yeah, maybe go to the folks' house for a little short cookout. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what the Steelers do if they keep us busy. Still got that one roster spot open. You're kind of thinking maybe you get a signing today for that second week of OTAs, but they're still sitting at 89.
Yeah, they are, and we still don't have a uniform number on Marcus Golden as of this morning. Kind of wondering if he's going to try to buy 44 from Tanner Muse and get Tanner Muse maybe to switch. What would he go to, like 54, I think, possibly? I think that's an open number. So anyway, going to be interesting. We got a week ahead of the second OTA practices for the Steelers. That gets underway, what, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So we should have a lot more news coming this week. But I think we've got a little bit of sort of quasi-news to discuss with Le'Veon Bell being on the Steel Here podcast a couple days. And that obviously created quite a few talking points, didn't it?
It did. He kept us pretty busy. And just one quick programming note, Dave and I will be doing our biweekly Steelers live stream on my YouTube channel tonight, 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern time. May cut it a little bit short based on turnout. Everybody obviously trying to enjoy the Monday off, but we will have that tonight for you guys. But yeah, Le'Veon Bell joining the Steel Here podcast and a lot of interesting things to say. It was like a 90-minute interview. Bell talked for the majority of that time. Kind of felt like a little mini therapy session for him. I think the headline story that's grabbing most of the, you know, local media, national media, is that Bell revealed that he would smoke weed often before Steelers games. And, you know, he's not the first player to admit this kind of stuff. Josh Gordon did. Derek Wolfe for the Broncos and Ravens said he would microdose on mushrooms. And so I think in 2023, it's less of a clutch your pearl shock thing compared to maybe where it was 5-7 years ago. Not that we're necessarily condoning it, but that is kind of the maybe the big revelation that Bell had to make.
Yeah, these many years later, I mean, I don't think it's shocking by any stretch of the imagination, but obviously with kind of, you know, what are the exact rules on that now?
I mean, the marijuana policy has been relaxed pretty substantially. That was part of the bargaining agreement in 2020, right, with a new CBA, basically, that got relaxed so the owners could get a 17th game to play. I don't believe you can really get suspended for it. I'm not even sure if you get put in the substance abuse program if they even test for it, but my understanding is not exact, but obviously it's very much relaxed and you're not going to get basically in trouble for smoking weed.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what he accomplished by admitting that, but I mean, got it off his chest and, you know, all that like that. And, you know, obviously it was a big story at the time with him getting pulled over with LeGarrette Blount back then, I think, at the time. And obviously it was a real newsy story at the time, but my biggest takeaway was, from all that was said, and that was, you know, he at this point kind of regrets not, or does regret, you know, being such a stickler for the guaranteed money. And boy, remember all the articles that I wrote at that time, that what that contract, what the best contract offer over those back to back years probably looked like. And, you know, I pretty much guaranteed that the Steelers weren't going to guarantee more than that first year money with him, which at the time, though, I think what did we determine or and what eventually came out? Something like the first year was going to pay him around, what, $20 million total, I think, between signing bonus and first year base salary and all like that. And obviously that would have been the only thing guaranteed at the time. But I remember writing several in several different posts at the time that, you know, the Steelers have had and have a great history of, you know, paying out, you know, not only, you know, large percentages of those high dollar contracts, but really about what, 9 times out of 10 paying out the full contract value over the length of it, barring anything substantial happening like an injury or a suspension or anything like that. So, you know, even though it was only guaranteed the first year money at the time, the chances of Le'Veon Bell playing out that entire deal, especially from the first time that he was franchise tagged, was probably going to be, you know, a high percentage of that. And, you know, obviously it turned into back-to-back franchise tags and him playing underneath the first one and not playing underneath the second one, and then going to the Jets. And we all saw, you know, how that turned out for him. Now, it was a nice, quick, guaranteed money, you know, grab for him initially, but, you know, he was out the door quickly. And then really not too long after that, you know, he was, you know, out of football, for lack of the better word, signing those minimum value, minimum or veteran benefit deals and all like that. So I think if he, you know, it made it sound like if he had to do it all over again, he probably would have taken the Steelers' best offer and gone from there.
Sure. I think that was really interesting to see him detail everything that happened contractually and his decision to sit out, his decision to leave. And he basically said, you know, I had a really good coach in Michigan State. I loved Mike Tomlin. He had really honest, upfront guys. And I was conditioned to think that every coach was like that. And so whenever he left for the Jets, he just thought it'd be the same thing. Adam Gase gets there. It did not go well. It was not the same thing. Bell, like so many players, unhappy with the job that Adam Gase did, and he was quickly fired. I thought it was interesting when Bell talked about what Pittsburgh's offer was, and I'm kind of paraphrasing here from trying to think back to a couple of days ago, but, you know, Pittsburgh sent him an offer on that first franchise tag. Bell declined it. They tag him. He plays. The next offseason, the tag goes up, but Pittsburgh sends him the exact same offer. I think it was, you know, $13.3 million per year or something to that effect. And so interesting, maybe that's another reason why Bell sat out that second time, because Pittsburgh never bumped up their offer.
Yeah, well, there's a whole, I can see, you know, tracking this as long as I have, I can see both sides of it, especially going all the way back then where it was quarterbacks only getting the guarantees, you know, Roethlisberger specifically getting the guarantees past the first year. Now, obviously, since then, we've had the guys like, you know, T.J. Watt and Minka Fitzpatrick be top of the market players. And you knew at some point that particular wall was going to come down, especially for top of the market at their position players. And at the time, technically, I guess what Le'Veon Bell was top of the market player, but they you know, it was way too early for them. You know, they were still going to hold firm with their stance on, you know, everybody but the quarterback, you know, is going to have to be fine with first year money. Now, the aspect of I can see Bell's side of that, because he ended up playing underneath the franchise tag that first year. So technically, when you applied that, what is it, the 120% rule on back-to-back years, you can understand, and then obviously in, you know, a year's inflation, you can understand why he probably expected the offer to go up a little bit more per year. But even
right, so, above the tag, the right, offer stayed and was below the second tag figure.
Right. And, you know, still that second offer after the second franchise tag wasn't going to include, wasn't going to include guaranteed money past the first year, I wouldn't think. I don't know if he said that specifically there, but I guess the Steelers' view of it was, well, look, you know, we offered you this deal, and we're, you know, take it or leave it still. So, you know, I guess you could slap the hands of both of them, right?
I mean, to a degree, obviously, because the deal didn't get done. I'm not trying to be hypercritical of necessarily either side. I mean, I think I understood Bell's position, and I think we can all look back in hindsight. It's always 2020. And from Pittsburgh's point of view, they probably said, well, the market didn't change, and we're kind of in a unique situation tagging a guy back-to-back years. So we're not going to keep, you know, raising against ourselves here, and we're just going to give you the same offer we gave you last time. But yeah, you do wonder. I mean, essentially, the reason why Bell left, and I don't think it was a shock at the time, but just to hear it now, is that it was over the guaranteed structure in Pittsburgh, not guaranteeing anything past the first year the Jets did. And that's why he left for New York. So that is the simple one sentence answer of why Bell went to New York.
Do you think he would have played out his contract? I mean, it's one of those, we don't like to deal with a lot of hypotheticals, but it does make you wonder, had he, let's say that first time he was tagged, had he taken that deal, do you feel pretty good about his chances of playing out that entire deal?
It would have been a 4-year contract.
Oh,
would that have been the number? He signed 4 years with New York, I believe.
I'm having problems. I wrote about it. It more than likely was going to be a what was the first year of the franchise of the tag with him?
17.
Mm-hmm. I view it as probably being a contract running 17, 18, 19, 20 through 2021. So 5 years in total.
Okay.
Because that's the longest that you could stretch out the signing bonus and right. All, you know, so it would have made sense that would have been a 5-year in total. Now, after the first year, did they lower it to just a 4-year? I still think it probably would have been another five, you know, another four mm-hmm. years on top of the franchise.
I think Bell said it was the same exact contract the second right. off season. So,
right. It was so it would have been five years in total, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get to year five. I'll put it this way, because the Jets were guaranteeing the first 3 years. Is that what Bell said? Do you remember?
No, not off the top of my head.
I want to say it was the first three. Bell would have gotten that far in Pittsburgh. And so from there, in year four, you're on non-guaranteed in New York and in Pittsburgh. So would have Bell made it to year five, given the running back position, given Pittsburgh was more than happy to run this guy into the ground as a true, rare workhorse type of back? Who knows? But all I think about with that, and I think Bell thinks about that, Steeler fans think about that, is what if he had stayed in Pittsburgh, what that career would have looked like. I don't think it's a stretch to say that, assuming he stayed relatively healthy in Pittsburgh and re-upped, he would have been on a Hall of Fame track had he stayed in Pittsburgh and not bolted to New York.
Well, even though, you know what, those first couple of years, he was on that track, right? At least with,
right.
I remember writing about him compared to, I think it was Eddie George or something at the time. And he certainly was, you know, he obviously was good out of the backfield and all like that. And as far as an all-purpose running back goes, he had a nice pace at that point for sure. So, and once again, had he stayed healthy and they were able to keep that line together a couple more years. Right. So it does make you wonder. I mean, now would he have been thrown on the pile after the fifth year? I mean, it's quite possible. Right.
Mm-hmm. But if you have like 4 good years from 2017 through 2020, whatever it is, I mean, if you can make, you know, 3 Pro Bowls and 3 All-Pro teams or something like that, I mean, you're going to be in that conversation.
I mean, how you know, in the old days, it seemed like running backs would play for 10, 12 years, the great ones, right?
Sure.
But nowadays, I kind of wonder now moving forward, what's this, you know, past the Adrian Petersons and past who's another Frank Gore.
Gore. Yeah. He's like son was about to play with him in the NFL.
Right. you know, what does this do to running backs, the future of running backs now in the NFL as it relates to the Hall of Fame conversation? I mean, we can both probably agree at this point. I mean, Le'Veon Bell's probably not going to get in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, right?
No, he has no chance.
Okay. Who are some of the more recent running backs, say, from the time that Bell entered the league till now that we're going to be potentially talking about as Hall of Famers? And how many years will they have to play in the NFL to do that? Because it has, I mean, we talk about the fungibility of the position nowadays and all like that. I mean, it seems like these backs come into the league and then they're, you know, obviously you still got Derrick Henry around mm-hmm. right now. But, you know, these guys just don't last as long.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the names, it's Derrick Henry. I mean, you could talk about Nick Chubb if he continues his career arc. I think what happens is teams just start to assume even before a player breaks down that they're going to break down, and so they don't give the second contract, and the player just kind of begins his journeyman phase of his career where he just kind of bounces from team to team. So, yeah, I don't know if our lens in terms of who is a Hall of Famer may change because these guys might be playing fewer years. They're seeing less time. Committees are more common. So the volume stats aren't there like they used to be at 300 plus carries consistently. So I don't know how it's going to look, but it certainly has shifted.
Boy, remember how Todd Gurley came onto the scene too? And then boom, you know, it seemed right to be gone in a month. And I'm trying to think now. I mean, who even in today's NFL, who are some of the longest tenured running backs in the league? I mean, Derrick Henry's got to be up there, right?
Yeah, I can pull up who has the most career carries of running backs right now. Henry's one of them. But yeah, you don't necessarily have that shelf life anymore.
And really back to kind of your point that you made, had he signed and stayed with the Steelers and stayed relatively healthy, he would be up there in today's lens of running back production, and thus probably, you know, I don't know how it would have been compared by the voters with today's running back versus yesteryear's running back, but I think it's, you know, fair or plausible to think that maybe he would have had a chance at the Hall of Fame.
I think so. I mean, the numbers he was putting up, I'm doing research last night for a future article. And I mean, in Bell's second year, he had a top 25 season in NFL history in yards from scrimmage. I mean, just absurd numbers that, you know, you just don't see from guys, especially that early in their career. In terms of running backs with the most carries that are active or at least semi-active in the NFL, Ezekiel Elliott is number one, a free agent right now. Mark Ingram's career, did he retire? I mean, he's basically retired. He's two, Derrick Henry, three, Melvin Gordon, four, Latavius Murray, five, Joe Mixon, six, Dalvin Cook, seven, Nick Chubb, eight. And so, you know, who's the Hall of Famer from that list? Derrick Henry.
Does it feel like Derrick Henry's a Hall of Famer?
I always ask myself, you know, do I get that initial yes feeling when someone says a guy's name? And I don't know if I get that with Derrick Henry, but obviously he's still, you know, playing and can add to his numbers.
Right. It's an interesting, boy, it feels like 2016 or 17. It doesn't seem that long ago when you do the math, but now with the way kind of running backs and the fungibility of Mar, it does almost feel like it's been a decade ago.
mm-hmm. And that's why Bell would have had even better odds to make it, because his competition wouldn't have been all that competitive when it comes to comparing him to other running backs of his era, to the point that you made a couple minutes ago.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, kind of looking ahead here, I mean, what does this do? I mean, it's going to be interesting to see the market of the running back moving forward here, specifically with Najee Harris, because I wrote about that, you know, I think earlier in the off season, that this past or around this same time next year, the Steelers would have already have had to made the decision on whether or not to pick up the fifth year option on Najee Harris. And then at that point, exactly 1 year from now, I guess we'll be talking about whether or not Najee will get an extension, right?
Right. I know we had this discussion a couple weeks ago, but I forget what you had said. Do you believe Harris gets that fifth year option picked up?
I think if he has the kind of year that this offense better have when it comes to playing the bully ball and all like that, and assuming he stays healthy, yes, I do believe that they will pick up the fifth year option. However, when you get into the extension talk, because the fifth year option would technically be for the 2025 season, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I guess what I'm, let's see, he's entering his third year right now. So he would play that. Yeah. I'm not sure if he would get the extension a year from now or not.
Let me ask you this, just to focus on the fifth year option. What would have to happen for him to not get it picked up by Pittsburgh? That might be a better way to frame it.
Well, injury, obviously.
Sure. Yeah.
Beyond that, it would just have to be a really pedestrian. Let's say he plays 15 games and just averages the 3.2 or 3.3 yards per carry. It would have to be a mighty pedestrian year, I think.
Okay, fair enough. I'm with you, basically. I think right now he's in position to have it picked up, but, you know, it's not, don't write that in pen quite yet.
Yeah, look, if he stays on the field for 15 to 17 games, I think you got to like his chances overall. But anything less than that, I think you really have to look at the current, you know, look at it. I don't think it's guaranteed. In other words, I wouldn't bet my house on it right mm-hmm. now. I like his chances. Now, as far as an extension past that, I mean, I think it all depends on the kind of season that he has.
Sure. I think that's a very fair point. Back to Bell, he made the comment that he hopes to retire as a Steeler whenever that day comes. He's not officially announced his retirement from the NFL. Kind of made a joke about, I want to get back in a game, and he was kind of more just tongue-in-cheek preseason stuff. I don't think it was a serious conversation that he wants to be a running back in a regular season contest for the Pittsburgh Steelers again. And I don't think Pittsburgh has a particular desire to add him, even if he really wanted to, but to the idea of the whole ceremony, one day, you know, sign a contract, retire thing. A, how do you feel about that, Dave? Are you open to that? And B, do you think Steelers Nation at large would be welcome to that idea? Would they invite him in to retire a Steeler?
Well, look, I think the byproduct of this most recent interview that he did has people coming back over. Time heals all wounds, right?
Sure.
Generally, you know. And I think at this point, people have forgotten a lot of the stupid stuff, you know. So I think the byproduct of this interview has him more in a favorable, reminiscent, nostalgic, because those are some great years, right? I mean, those are some years with the Killer Bees and all, where more than anything at this point, when you look back at that time, you're thinking, how the hell did this team not win a Super Bowl?
I know, right?
You know, I think that's the biggest thing, the biggest takeaway right now today, you know, all these, you know, these 4 or 5 days after this interview now, I think that's the global takeaway right now, especially with AB and all the nonsense that continues on with him. And by the way, good thing I didn't buy that pay-per-view.
Yeah. You'd be disappointed. A little no-show.
But I think the global kind of sentiment right now on the heels of that interview with Bell is that how the hell didn't that team win a Super Bowl? Secondary to that, I think people are like, you know, kind of glad to hear Bell say, man, I wish I would have taken the offer, you know, the grass isn't blah, blah, blah. Grass isn't greener on the other side and all like that. I think we are still, however, a few years away from there being a higher percentage of us acceptance of, oh yeah, bring him back in. Let's have the Hines Ward ceremony or insert, you know, the James, because even James Harrison left, right? And came back. But I think we're a few years away from that. So I guess what I'm saying is if Bell, you know, goes on and does his thing with the boxing and all like that, maybe does one or two more of these similar style interviews of saying, yeah, I should have, yeah, I wish we would have stayed and all like that. I think we could be looking at the plausibility of us seeing kind of that ceremony in Pittsburgh. I don't know if the Steelers are ready for it right now. And I don't know if the fan base at a larger percentage is ready for that. But I don't think he hurt his cause by doing this interview. Does that make sense?
It does. I think Pittsburgh would be open to it as an organization. I think Mike Tomlin would. I don't hold a grudge against Bell. I never really did in the first place. I think he made a mistake. I think he was making bad financial decisions. I think he was kind of chasing some of that money and not necessarily looking at the longer road, the bigger picture. But the way that I framed it to somebody was, you know, when Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown exited on one of those many bridges out of Pittsburgh, Le'Veon Bell left a couple of potholes and they can be repaired. They won't, because potholes don't get repaired in Pittsburgh, but they can be repaired. Antonio Brown burned the whole bridge down.
And that became a sinkhole.
Yeah, the bus fell in Pittsburgh, if anyone gets that reference from a couple of years ago. So two different things. What's the worst thing that Bell did? I mean, he got suspended a couple times. They were some probably immature, some poor decisions, but they weren't just the bombs that AB was throwing at the organization, at Mr. Rooney, at the whole team. And you don't have all this craziness that has followed Bell. I mean, it's, you know, since his NFL career has essentially ended. I mean, he's done his boxing thing, but he's not done anything that's drawn really a negative headline the way that Antonio Brown repeatedly and continues to have. So I think it can be forgiven. I think the fan base, it's going to be more mixed. There'll be some guys that just don't like Bell. It's not going to be this hatred. They just don't really want to see him in Pittsburgh again. But I think with time, another year or two, I think most fans would be accepting of that and would probably appreciate Bell. You know, hey, I want to come back and just want to thank you guys for my time in Pittsburgh, because it was a really great couple of years.
Yeah, and especially if the press conference is kind of that 15-minute variety of short and sweet and,
yeah,
you know, praise of the organization and you know, I wish I wouldn't have left, and, you know, his global message being the byproduct of that being the grass isn't always greener on the other side and you know, all that kind of stuff, then I mean, I can visualize that press conference happening. I just don't think it's going to be in a year or two kind of thing there. Look, you know, Bell still has me blocked on Twitter, because I mean, I was very upfront, and it was nothing against him overall. It was just, you know, my job is to look at this stuff and analyze it, and especially contractually and all. And I, you know, at the time, I think he was asking what, $15 million per year, new money average. And I, in so many words, I wrote that he wasn't going to get that from the Steelers, and he definitely wasn't going to get guaranteed money past the first year. Mm-hmm. And he didn't on either accord. I wasn't trying to be, it wasn't anything aimed at him. It was just analyzing the situation, and you know, I was right about it. Now, where I was wrong on the whole Le'Veon Bell thing there was after he played underneath the franchise tag the first year and then got tagged again, I was pretty certain that he was going to learn his lesson and that he would have accepted the Steelers' best deal the second time around because the deadline was like once you tag the player is like the middle of July. Mm-hmm. And then if you don't take it, you have to play underneath the tag at that point moving forward there. I was pretty sure after he was tagged the second time and the closer we got to that middle of July deadline, I was fairly certain that he would have, you know, wised up and taken the deal at that point. Well, obviously he didn't. And then he sat out. And we know how things transpired there. But, you know, everything that I wrote at that time was more analysis, and it wasn't aimed at him, the person overall. But obviously they athletes see that as an attack, right?
Mm-hmm. You know, sure.
And look, I mean, I praised that kid out of the chute, you know, and wrote, you know, before he got into the whole contract situation, you know, quite a few articles, like we said, that this guy's on a Hall of Fame pace and all like that. So it's just on, you know, once again, I think I go back to after, you know, hearing that interview the other day and all like that. You know, my main takeaway, and probably several listening to this podcast as well too, is, you know, how the hell did and obviously there were injuries in there, and he talked about that and the whole perfect thing. And, right. and you know, obviously you go back to that, that year that they ended up having to play the Patriots in the AFC championship game, and, you know, not having Bell for that. And man, they were down. You go back and you look at the active roster for that game with the, who was the wide receiver?
Kobe Hamilton.
Catching
like a late touchdown pass or something.
And at the time you had yourself believing that this team had a chance, but I mean, they were down too many pieces at that time, and there was just no, against Tom Brady and company, and there was just no way they were going to win that game. But I, you know, I think once again, my overall takeaway was, man, that team, If they had been able to stay healthy, it makes you wonder why they didn't win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, their success was disappointing because of the talent they had, but there were a bunch of injuries in the playoffs. I think didn't AB get a concussion, and I think Ben was probably beat up at some point, and Bell, you know, repeatedly had a couple late season or, you know, postseason type injuries that I think hamstrung this team. But yeah, you certainly, it's a bunch of what ifs with all those guys. It sort of feels like, what if AB hadn't gone off the rail? What if Le'Veon Bell would have stayed? You know, could you have, you know, really made it? Had you just put together 1 year where everything went right, you got lucky health wise, could you have made a run? I think this team certainly could have. The only thing I can't figure out from Bell's side is I still don't really understand why he sat out the entire 2018 season. I was at just, you know, him kind of sticking it to the Steelers. I mean, you turn down, you know, $14 million on a tag to sit out. I know there's the whole preserve your body, not risk the injury aspect. I don't know if I got an explanation of really why he decided to actually sit out the entire season.
Yeah, I think he was looking at it along with Adisa Bakari, his agent at the time, was more of, well, we've got money in the bank at this point because they had played underneath the franchise tag the previous year. And, you know, is it worth it that if I got injured, all of it goes to crap, you know, at that point. So we risk a lot of future money at that point. Whereas if we just sit out, we're probably going to get paid anyway.
Yeah. I mean, he could have made that same calculation in 2017 though, but he played under the tag that year. I guess he just didn't want to do it again.
Right. Right.
So fair enough. Anyway, and I know we're talking about Le'Veon Bell a lot here, but right. There's really not much else to talk about on this Monday. If there was, I promise you, we'd be leading off with it.
Well, but look, I think it was a great interview overall. Yeah. I think it was a good podcast. I think the timing of it was perfect and all with the NFL news cycle and all like that. And I thought there were some very interesting stories of it. Like probably most listening to this right now at this point, you probably came away with that with Le'Veon Bell being in a lot more favorable light than he was going into the interview on top of it. And now he's probably going to have a little bit of support when it comes to his boxing career and about a potential future of him retiring as a Steeler and that kind of thing. So, from a PR standpoint, especially his own, I think he did a good job.
Yeah, I think so too. And it did seem like he felt a bit better, maybe a bit of a weight off his shoulders, because he's never really sat down. He's had a couple interviews, but it's never really talked to this level of depth about his time in Pittsburgh, his NFL career. So maybe that makes him sleep a little bit better at night as well.
Right. So we'll see where it goes from here. And you know, once again, I can envision that day of maybe him having that retirement press conference. I just think I'll be surprised if it happens, let's say, within the next couple of years.
Fair enough. And I would welcome it because we're not throwing a parade for the guy. It's a 15-minute press conference. He signs his contract. They take a couple photos with Tomlin and then, you know, they do a social media thing and he leaves. So, right. You know, it's not going to be this kind of big thing that even if you hate leaving Bell, it's not going to interrupt your day too much, I promise. One piece of Steelers news that did come across this weekend, and it's just a tryout, so it's not an official signing despite that one open roster spot remaining for Pittsburgh right now. But according to the XFL, long snapper Antonio Ortiz is going to have a tryout for Pittsburgh here. I assume maybe today, maybe tomorrow, sometime soon. And so that's a long snapper who played with the XFL, the Arlington Renegades. He had bounced around in Chicago, in Dallas. And so we'll see if this team adds a long snapper to their roster.
Is that going to be number 90?
It could be if they want a second, you know, true snapper. They usually don't carry two true snappers. Usually their backup kind of emergency snapper is a position player. But some of the guys they've had in recent years are no longer with the team. You go back to Vance McDonald. He was once the emergency snapper. John LeGlue, Derek Watt was the snapper last year. He's still a free agent. And, you know, I was at times kind of critical of Christian Kuntz this past year because I think he, you know, didn't have that great of a year. I know it's kind of hard to judge long snappers. There weren't any botched snaps, but just, you know, I thought there were some high snaps on field goals. So maybe this team wants to look for a little bit of competition.
Yeah, I don't think Kuntz is at the level of a 9-10 year player like Warren and who was before?
Mike Schneck.
Yeah, Schneck. I mean, where it just seemed like every given offseason, those guys were going to sign veteran benefit contracts or 2-year extensions or something like that. I don't think Kuntz has done enough to be at that level. I guess what I'm getting at is I wouldn't be surprised if they brought in competition for Kuntz.
Right. So we'll keep an eye on that again. Just it was just weird the way the XFL initially framed it was that he was invited to camp, which is not a thing. There's no invites to camp. Rookie minicamp is over, but it's apparently going to be a tryout and we'll take it from there.
Right. So we'll have to see what happens come Tuesday at whatever time they hit the practice field.
I mean, they got to fill up this extra roster spot soon, you would think. I mean, mm-hmm. heck, they're sitting one short right now. You know, you have 90, use all 90.
Right. Exactly.
As of right now, number 89 is Cody. How do you say the last name? Kreshd?
Trest.
Trest. Cody Trest from Sam Houston State. He was signed last week. I did the scouting report on Trest over the weekend, and he's like a very, very poor man's George Pickens in this height, weight, speed, vertical Z receiver. Good tracking, good hands, can win jump ball. He's got a little bit of kind of little man athleticism. I don't see the freakiness in the way that he tested running a 4.39. I don't see that long speed. I don't see the yak ability. I don't see a lot of separation. He's a guy that's like that true and blue Z type that will go up and get the ball. He doesn't high point the ball the way that George Pickens does, but he does track it well. He can win contested. He's a pretty physical guy. And so that's the type of player this team is getting in Cody Trest.
All right. So we'll see how long he sticks now.
Yeah, probably, you know, to make the 53 is going to be very, very tough to do. Practice squad at best. And even then, he's going to have probably some sizable competition. Dave, one other quick thing, too, that we have to mention, kind of maybe the biggest news that directly relates, in a sense, to the Pittsburgh Steelers this weekend was it's the old adage, dude, where's my car? Where's the Pickett's? Someone has a really funny Photoshop of the new movie with Pickett on there. So credit to whoever made that. But yeah,
Pickett was Bidstonian.
Oh, is that who did that? Okay, yeah. That makes sense. That tracks. I just saw it floating around, but they do great work. So that makes sense. They're the originators of that. But yeah, Kenny Pickett apparently doing a radio interview and his Hyundai Genesis was stolen. And funny enough, the dealership he was at is like a mile, like 2 miles from my house. It's real close. And so I go past it all the time. So yeah, his car was stolen with a playbook inside it. Police recovered the car. I believe they recovered the playbook as well. So yeah, Kenny Pickett, that's a heck of a week.
You know, way back when I lived down in Florida and all, and obviously one of the closer teams there was the New Orleans Saints. And it's back when the Saints weren't very good. The old joke was if you go to New Orleans for a Saints game, you don't feel like going to the game. Don't put your don't put your pair of tickets on underneath the windshield wiper of your car, because when you come back, there'll be six others in there. And I say that because the playbook being in there, surprised they didn't recover that and find Randy Feetner's playbook in there along with
Good news is the suspect didn't find the playbook because it's so small they couldn't actually see it in there, so that was good.
There are a couple of funny jokes floating around over there. You had to think at first he thought somebody's playing a joke on him, right? I mean,
right.
I can't wait to hear the next interview with him when he's asked about that, because he's probably going to think, and you know, he does kind of have that dude, where's my car kind of personality as well too. So he probably was like, dude, where's my car? And probably thought one of his pit brothers or something, did something with it. But I guess, all's well that ends well. I don't think the car was, at least from what I've gathered, wasn't damaged or anything like that, and you know, got the playbook back. So it becomes a story to tell. But it will be interesting to hear the next time he does get in an interview what kind of his initial reaction. I'm willing to bet he thinks somebody was playing a joke on him, but it ended up being no joking matter.
Yeah, they did catch the suspect. He's arrested. I just have two questions. Hey, how does this guy manage to steal Kenny Pickett's car in a dealership with presumably a lot of people around? I mean, I don't know where his car was at. And then two, was it an actual playbook? Because usually they're on iPads these days. They're just electronic. So do you think it was an actual paper playbook, or do you think it was his iPad in there? It sounded like it was a paper playbook, but that's pretty old school.
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess we don't know the specifics too on that. I would think they would probably be locked in some way form, but maybe it was, I don't know, maybe it was a folder or binder or something like that. I just don't know on that. So
yeah, and I only say that because if it was an iPad, it's probably harder to actually access. Although it seems like the suspect did not care it was Kenny Pickett's card, and it could care less about the playbook. But if it was electronic, then it's probably going to be harder to obviously look at and see than if it was an actual paper playbook sitting back there.
And what was the type of car?
It was a Hyundai Genesis. Yeah, not the car I thought Kenny Pickett would drive, but that is a reasonable car. He's not splurging on something crazy.
Kenny Pickett, man of the people, right?
Something like that. So, yeah, crazy story there. One last thing to note here, Dave, Mike Munchak was speaking on The Fan last Thursday. I believe they have the football camp they have every year in Pittsburgh. And so he does kind of an annual interview with those guys in Pittsburgh. And nothing earth-shattering, but Munchak did confirm, hey, I still want to coach in the NFL. He's been out of the league all last year, said he took care of some health-related stuff, got a knee replacement or two, and he's feeling good right now and wants to get back into coaching. Will that be in Pittsburgh? I mean, he had nice things to say about Pat Meyer, the Steelers offensive line coach, and so, you know, barring the Steelers O-line looking like a disaster in 2023, Meyer should remain as the O-line coach, and so I don't think Munchak's going to come back to Pittsburgh, but he does want to coach somewhere in the NFL, hopefully next season.
Well, I think everybody would be listening to this would be open to a Mike Munchak return in some capacity. Here's the disclaimer to that, though. If Munchak becomes part of this coaching staff in 2024, that probably means things on offense didn't go the way most envisioned it would, right? And it would mean probably Pat Meyer being out of a job.
Yeah, which means probably something really, really bad happened, because for Meyer to go from, hey, he's done a good job, to fired in a year probably means disaster happened. And I understand, like some people said, you know, can you make him an assistant, a consultant, replace John Mitchell as the assistant head coach, give him that title, A, with the head coach title, you know, is Munchak going to really get to work with offensive linemen in that way? Maybe not as much as he would like to, obviously. And then if you brought Munchak in, it's kind of a middle finger to Pat Meyer, because you're bringing in a Hall of Fame great offensive line coach in Munchak, and might be harder for Meyer to really get these guys to focus on him when Munchak's right there. So I don't know if that's a fair dynamic to Pat Meyer.
Yeah, my main takeaway, and look, I mean, if Mike Munchak says he wants to continue coaching, there's nothing to nothing to lead me to believe that he wouldn't be welcome back in NFL circles. So within that, I would think that, assuming he you know, that remains his goal for 2024, with there being 32 NFL teams, and with we see annually a good quarter to a third of them go through coaching changes, I have to believe, or you know, my thought is that Mike Munchak will be coaching an offensive line somewhere in 2024. And once again, if it is in Pittsburgh, it's probably because things did not go well at all in 2023.
Right. But he should be somewhere if he wants to be next year, which it appears that he does, because he's still one of the best offensive line coaches in football. And if he's not coaching in the NFL, then offensive lines across the league are worse off because of it.
Right. I would agree.
All right, Dave, any other thoughts here? Anything else in terms of Pittsburgh? Again, pretty quiet week. Calvin Austin saying he would like, you know, he's open and confident to be a return man in Pittsburgh. Not earth-shattering there. Although he didn't do a ton of return stuff at Memphis. A little bit on punts, nothing on kicks. He did have one crazy punt return against Mississippi State on kind of a wacky play. But I assume he's going to be very much in that mix. And kickoffs may matter even less because of the new fair catch kickoff rule. But in terms of punt returner, you know, you got Olszewski, you have Austin. Anybody else who might be in that competition?
Yeah, I was trying to think on the fly last night when I was writing this up about him and all, who would be in serious contention. You know, obviously Sims is left via free agency. Gunnar Olszewski's time in Pittsburgh is probably entering its final stages, barring injury. I mean, Gunnar would have to be near flawless. I guess the couple of the young Bird, right?
Right, Jordan Bird.
Will be in contention to have a Stephon Logan type kind of preseason and summer as far as that goes. But and then yeah, I mean, I think you hit on it. Was the big thing is you know, even after he was drafted, we were kind of wondering, could Calvin Austin, you know, potentially be the Steelers' return man in 2022. Well, then, you know, you get to into March and or even before that was when they signed Gunnar Olszewski, right? So,
right.
But, you know, Calvin entered the NFL, even though he looked good on the few punt returns that he had, he didn't return kickoffs, and his resume when it comes to punt returns in general isn't that, you know, big. So he's got a lot to prove. But within all that, I mean, you would feel like he's going to be first up, right? Along with Gunner. I mean, it's going to be him and Gunner, at least initially, you would think, competing for it.
Yeah, I think so. Let me give you the case for Gunner Olszewski for just a moment. Let's say Calvin Austin does not look comfortable or competent in the return game. Does Gunner make it just because who else are you going to have back there? I mean, you know, if Jordan Burt were to explode and have a couple big run backs, he will vault himself in the conversation. But if you wanted to make the case for Gunner, I know obviously last year's return guy didn't go well. He got replaced by Steven Sims, but Sims is gone. If Gunner can show something there and Austin can't, do you feel like you almost have to keep Olszewski on there just for that return aspect of it all?
I think Gunner has to be dead solid perfect, you know.
Well, my thought is if he's perfect, good, but what if Austin's just that bad? Like, what if it just doesn't go well? He muffs a couple, whatever. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but it could. And so it may not be where Gunner has to be great. He just has to be not bad, and Austin or who else the competition is may have to struggle.
I think this team needs to get past just the not be bad.
sure.
I mean, look, last year, you know, and look, you know, for you know, Sims provided a couple of splash plays last year, right? But even he, over a season's worth of time, probably not ideal. I mean, this team, when it came to punt returns as a team last year, averaged 5.9 yards per return, and I think that ranked them, what, 30th in the NFL, you know? And then when you look at kick return average, once again, I think that was aided by you know, one or two of them there. 21.3 yard average was good for only tied for 24th overall in the NFL. This 2023 Steelers team needs it all over for this team to make the playoffs and potentially win a playoff game. They're going to need it from all three phases this year. So special teams has got to have their flag planted in this a lot better than what it's been the last couple of years. So I guess what I'm getting at is if not awful is the bar, well, then you need to go outside the organization and go look that way.
That is a really good point to think about in terms of what this team could add, less so likely on a trade, but in terms of cut down a potential return guy. And the good news with Austin is that although he hasn't done kicks, I think, A, he can. He's got the skill set to do it, and right. It's going to matter less because you're going to get a lot of those fair catches this year. He's done some punts, and punt returners are still going to be, you know, pretty valuable overall. But, yeah, I mean, I would think right now it's Austin versus Olszewski versus a bit of Bird. McFarland can do kicks, not punts. That's not going to be enough value for McFarland to stick. So you really hope, though, Austin can be the guy, because if not, it's going to create some awkwardness when constructing your roster.
I'll leave it at this. The best-looking ugly girl is not going to cut it.
Well, speak for yourself over there, Dave, because my philosophy is a little bit different than yours, I guess. Anyway, yeah, anything else here, Dave? I forgot to mention just one thing with Trest. He went to high school with Braden Mann, the Steelers punter, claimed off of waivers. They were high school teammates, but that's a very random, pretty much irrelevant fact. Any other Steelers-related stuff? TJ Watts heard good things about Marcus Golden. That's always good, I guess.
Yeah, look, I mean, he played with Golden, played with obviously his brother JJ Watt, and you'd have to think those two have shook hands somewhere within there, right? You know,
probably.
And yeah. You know, they all could probably learn. You know, having a veteran in there like Golden, like we talked about the other day, that's been around the league. I think everybody can learn from everybody still at this point, and especially a little bit younger guy and Alex Highsmith, who is matured as a pass rusher. I think all three of those guys, once again, if they stay healthy, I think you have a nice little rotation over there. So assuming Golden, like you said, comes in not thinking that he's going to be able to compete for the starting job and knows his role. And if all three of them can stay healthy, this looks a lot better than it did a week ago.
It does. It does. One last fun note here. Najee Harris had a good weekend. He was out there in the Bay throwing out the first pitch for an Oakland Athletics game. Some kind of the star of the night for the team, which is good because the team is terrible and they are moving to your neck of the woods, Las Vegas, in the next couple of years. So Najee Harris, always a crowd pleaser.
Boy, this town has become a sports juggernaut now, you know, and got the A's. It's going to be interesting. Just a little bit of filler real quick here, but you know, they built a new stadium a couple of years ago out here in Summerlin for the what they call them, the Aviators, and moved them from that old stadium that they had back when they were the Dodgers affiliate, the 51s. And that stadium now, I think, is only 3 or 4 years old at this point for the, and you know, the they are the AAA affiliate of the Athletics right now. So it's going to make it kind of interesting. And obviously too, if the A's were to make the move after this, I guess would be next season, I think, or two seasons. Anyway, they would still be building the new stadium and all. So they would have to play in the Aviators minor league stadium until the other one is finished. I just wonder how we here in Las Vegas kind of wonder how that all would work. Would they still keep the AAA? In other words, have the AAA team still in the same town as the major league team? And would they just work around the home and away schedule, or would they lose the AAA team to, I don't know, somewhere in Arizona or something like that? And then what would happen to that new stadium for the minor league team after
once the Athletics leave.
Right. So that I guess that's some of the questions that go along with that. But that's not even Steelers or podcast related. But I just thought, being as how I live out here, some people might like to know it.
No, it's interesting because I know that this situation with the A's has gotten a lot of attention, and ownership seems to be a wreck, and I know the fans have kind of boycotted, and the A's have won, what, 10 games this year? I mean, it's getting bad in Pittsburgh as Pirates fans with the slide the Pirates are on, but the A's are just, you know, just incredibly depressing. But I think at least for Najee Harris, making it fun for one evening for however many fans attended.
And it did look like he had some fun doing it too. So good on him. Good kid.
All right, Dave, let's get through some reader emails and close out today's show.
All right, let's see. I don't know if we have too many in here on this holiday weekend. Let me see if I
can. And again, just a reminder, Dave and I live stream tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern time, for maybe a little less than our usual hour, depending on turnout. But we'll be there to hang out with you guys on this Monday.
All right. Murray from Brisbane writes in, good day, Dave and Alex. Cheers to you guys and the team for providing the deepest Steelers analysis available. A recent chat about Kenny's new helmet and concussions got me thinking and comparing to rugby, rugby union and league, rugby league here in Australia, where no helmets are worn. He says, I believe concussions stats are significantly lower in both league and union. Would the NFL ever consider no helmets? He says, also league state of origin, Queensland versus New South Wales. First game is on Wednesday night here, Tuesday for you guys, which is always an absolutely epic battle. Will you guys watch? Keep up the true blue, fair dinkum work. You guys are bloody legends. Go the Cane Toads in Queensland. Well, first and foremost, it's always exciting to get emails, not only from listenership, but from those that far away, and all in Australia there. So No, I'm not up on my rugby at all. It is interesting that you state that concussion stats are significantly lower in both those leagues. No, I do not believe this. The NFL would ever consider going the no helmet route. But I do find myself wondering from time to time when these stats, and I said this the other day, is, man, I kind of envision helmets being a lot more safer than they are now.
Yeah, to answer all those questions, I won't be watching the rugby match. I've watched a couple over the years, and they're pretty interesting to see, but I probably won't be catching that one. I mean, I have an appreciation for the sport because, A, primarily football, American football, comes from rugby. It was born in Canada. Well, I don't know if rugby was born in Canada, but they were playing rugby in Canada, and that kind of trickled down to the Northeast New England area, and that kind of eventually morphed into what we know as American football today. So that's kind of the roots of the American football game. The NFL is never going to ditch helmets. I mean, there was a time way back when in the 30s and 40s where helmets weren't mandated. I believe this story has kind of been in dispute. I believe the last player to not wear a helmet was a Steeler for a brief moment. He was more famously a Chicago Bear. His name was Eggs Mansky, and there's kind of some debate about who was the last guy to not wear a helmet and get grandfathered in, but I know Eggs Mansky was one of those last guys. But, you know, I don't know all the data. I've heard some of that stuff about, you know, obviously, if you don't have helmets, guys are going to be a little less reckless, more protective. But the NFL is never going to ditch that for optics alone. And, you know, if somebody does get hurt without a helmet, it's going to create this whole PR issue that the NFL is never, ever going to go down.
Right. Murray, thanks for the email there. I hope you're doing well over there. And Alex, I think that on this short week here and holiday week, I think that's all we have in the email machine this week.
All right. So we'll come back Wednesday. Should have more to talk about Wednesday Steelers OTAs, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of this week. And so we'll come back and see if there is a number 90. Maybe it's Ortiz, the long snapper, maybe somebody else. And we'll recap it all for you guys.
As we wind up this show too, let everybody know that we've, you know, for the time being, we have moved the podcast away from Spreaker to Spotify. Obviously, Spotify is a globally accepted huge platform. We like some features that they are offering. We're going to give this kind of a test run On Spotify for right now. Now listen, anywhere that you know, if you don't go to Spotify to listen to the podcast specifically, you should still be able to find it on whatever platform that you use. None of that's going to change. However, if you have been going to Spreaker specifically to listen to the podcast, you're not going to be able to do that, at least for the time being. We're not opposed to moving it back to Spreaker if things don't go the way that we hope that they'll go on Spotify here, but I just want to give everybody a heads up. And it would be helpful if you went to Spotify. I know a lot of you listen directly on Spotify because you listen to a lot of podcasts there and music and all like that. So in the meantime, you know, if you want to go to Spotify specifically and start listening to the podcast, fine. We encourage you to do so. However, you know, I think the biggest thing, if you're a listener, the only thing that you'll see change is if you have been going to Spreaker specifically to listen to the podcast. I don't think you're going to be able to do that, at least for the time being here. So I just want to give everybody a heads up. You know, the Spotify has got some interesting options that we're looking into to maybe start adding and all. So anyway, just wanted to give everybody a heads up on that. So as we close out the show, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow Alex on Twitter at Alex_Kozora. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate to the cause, SteelersDepot.com. Hit the donate button up right, navigational bar. Also, if you like an ad-free version of the site, go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit the ad-free button up right, navigational bar. So until Wednesday, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.